Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kelly, your host. What a great Friday show we've got for you. Second hour, Dr. Matthew Bunsen will be here, and we're going to talk about the church in the news as we do with him on Fridays from time to time. And always there is news. If you want to, if you got maybe a news story you want to ask him about, you can call. But if you don't, we'll just discuss the news. And I always have a great time talking with him. So hang around for that. This hour, she's back. She's a scientist. She's a theologian. Soon, well, in a certain sense, she's already a philosopher. I've got to update my introduction of her, because when I introduce her as a speaker, I always say scientist and theologian, Dr. Stacy Drisankos, but now it'll have to be scientist, theologian, and philosopher. Stacy Drisankos, thanks for being here with us.
Hello, Cy. It's great to be back.
So you're the reason I say you're about to be a philosopher. Oh, by the way, if you want to call about faith and science, that's what we talk about with Stacy. So you're welcome to call. You don't have to be Catholic. You don't have to be Christian. You don't have to be a believer of any sort. You don't have to know a great deal of science, whatever. If you've got a question about science or faith, Stacy likes talking about both of them. 888-318-7884. So what is this about? Tell me about what's happening in your philosophy career now that you've mastered the worlds of science and theology. I'm sorry to say that. I know you don't like it if I say that, but what's going on in philosophy with you?
Yeah, I realized that I couldn't put chemistry and theology together until I learned some philosophy, because that's the language that St. Thomas Aquinas uses to explain theological truths and doctrines of the church. So I've just been lost wandering around all these years of my life, and now I'm finally searching for the truth in philosophy. And I do feel very blessed to be able to do that, because I think using what I know from chemistry and what I've learned from theology, and to be able to put it together in a way really for scientists to be able to talk about their science in a way that jives with theology and philosophy, is a very exciting prospect to me, because I know there's a lot of Catholic scientists out there, and I know they feel what I felt, that they're just like two different islands of knowledge, the science over here and theology and faith over here. And it is harder to put them together. You can always say God made everything, but that's just not enough. You want to explain nature a little bit more and understand our world more. So I'm excited to be doing this. It's a search for truth. I just don't want to die without crossing that bridge and figuring out how to put it all together, at least somewhat.
Yeah. No, I understand that. But so you're going to, in your PhD, you're going to study matter. Now, you've, as a chemist, you've studied matter. As a matter of fact, that's what you worked with, was the building blocks of matter, atoms and molecules. Yeah. So what are you hoping to get out of studying the philosophical side of matter?
Because a philosopher asked me what matter is, and I was like, what is matter? Is anything that has mass and takes up space? And he's like, that's not an answer. That's not what matter is.
That's a description, not a definition.
Yeah. We know how to measure it. We know how to talk about it quantitatively. We know it when we see it, but getting into the Aristotelian concepts of prime matter and elements and what elements are and blending, it's just really captured my interest, because it's not satisfying just to say matter is anything that has mass and takes up space. It's something God created, and I want to know more about it.
If you would like to know more about science or theology or faith and science in any way, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. Dr. Stacy Drisankos is our guest. 888-318-7884. She was once described by Forbes magazine as a geek. So that's correct. Am I correct about that?
Yeah.
Okay. That would be awful if I just made that up. If because sometimes I do make things up and I don't realize I did. But that would be awful if I just made that one up. A geek for atoms, a geek for molecules, and a geek for Jesus. A geek love it all. You just love studying it all.
Said Trosenkos represents a very rare bird, the scientist who did not cease to be a geek even after she got religion. I'm so flattered by that.
I think it is flattering. I think that's a great, there's something great about that. Because I feel like being a geek for something in a certain way is having a certain innocent wonder at it, that you're not jaded, you're not cynical. And that's one of the problems with the world today is like a kind of unearned cynicism, just like, man, yeah. I've watched a lot of Netflix. I know what everything's about. And it's very casual, unearned. I don't know another word for it, cynicism.
Yeah. And, you know, I hear the apologists at Catholic Answers use that word a lot, too. Like, they like to geek out.
Oh, yeah.
On because Carlo Broussard says that a lot, and Tim Staples.
I'm just telling you right now, when those two are geeking out, find somewhere else to be. It's a horrible experience.
Yeah. I know. I'm saying that. I'm like, you know what I'm talking about. Totally.
Yes. Yes. I'm going to tell you. I've told them both. Like one of my most terrifying experiences at Catholic Answers was being stuck on a plane with the two of them when they would not stop with the philosophical geeking out. I'm like, man, I'm just trying to watch a cheesy movie here. Stop. 888-318-7884 is the number. All right, let me ask you a basic question then, because I know that lots of people listening are not people of faith. Are you this just an example of, you know, okay, sure, a Catholic discovering science, but you're a little late to the game. I mean, Catholics finally discovering science. Where were you in the Middle Ages? I mean, I know you personally weren't in the Middle Ages, but you know what I'm saying. You get the idea.
Yeah.
How do you respond to that?
I stopped studying biology because I couldn't explain what was happening with the atoms. And so I switched my major to chemistry because it was a search for the first principles, the first truth, what's underneath all of this.
I'm sorry. I'll tell you what. We'll take a quick break and see if we can straighten it out. That's that old Texas internet. Stacy lives down in Texas. I'm sorry, Texas. It's not your fault. It's probably our internet here in California. But we have to take a break because there's a little interruption in our connection with Stacy. Dr. Stacy Trosenko, scientist, theologian, philosopher, and geek, here to talk with you about faith and science. If you have questions about faith and science, and it's okay if they're challenging questions, if you don't share our beliefs, our faith, you're welcome here. We love talking about these things. If you're atheist or agnostic or maybe practice another religion or philosophy, or if you're a believer and you'd like to know something about the intersection of faith and science, anyone's welcome. As long as you want to talk about faith and science, pick up the phone and call 888-318-7884.
Catch Catholic Answers Live anytime at Catholic.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
He is honored as a saint, monk, and the only English-born doctor of the church.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Bede entered a monastery in England as a child and spent almost his entire life there teaching and writing. He was perhaps the most learned person of his era, authoring biblical commentaries and the famed Ecclesiastical History of the English People. He died in 735 and was named a doctor in 1899.
To find out more about the Doctors of the Church, visit EWTN.com and click on Catholicism.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Gellett, your host, And I want to invite you again to our Catholic Answers Conference that is a month away. A month from today, we will be at the conference, September 26th through 29th. It's at the Hyatt Regency La Jolla here in San Diego. CatholicAnswersConference.com is where you can go to find out all the details. I've been letting you know about it a lot, but I'll just remind you again that the parables, sermons, and conversations of Jesus Christ is the theme. We're going to talk about the parables, sermons, and conversations of Jesus Christ. Well, that's a pretty good time. I'll tell you who's going to come talk about those things, though. Dr. Scott Hahn, Dr. Ray Guarendi, Kimberly Hahn, Father Sebastian Walsh, Dr. William Junker, and all of our apologists here at Catholic Answers. Find out all about it at CatholicAnswersConference.com. CatholicAnswersConference.com. Stacy, sorry about that.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. We got you on the phone now, though, and I'm glad we do. Faith and science is our topic, and I don't even know where we cut you off in the middle, but you were telling us about matter, about your study of matter, and I asked you about, well, what about the person who says, oh, yeah, well, fine, you're a Catholic who's a scientist, but the Catholic Church is late to the game in science. But your answer surprised me on that. You were talking about your personal experience of science. You were saying you needed to know, you wanted to get to the basics, and so you started studying atoms.
Yeah. And so I started studying atoms, and then later, after I converted, I had the same attitude. I want to get underneath things. I want to understand why. And that's when I discovered Father Stanley Yawkey's work about how science was born of Christianity, and I wrote a book about that because I wanted to get to the bottom of it and understand why. I understand now that the Catholic view of the universe, like as God created something good with rationality and intelligibility to us, that's all a necessary worldview to even be able to do science and have it make sense. Like you can go to work and put the lab coat on, whatever, but if you really want to understand your place in the world as a human person who is doing science and what that all means and what it is that you're trying to do whenever you try to discover the mysteries of the universe, it requires what we pray in the first line of the creed, that we look at the earth as creation. And so now I'm just trying to find a way to take that back into physics, chemistry, and biology in a way that makes sense, so that scientists who practice can also have a better understanding of what it is they do. And so people who don't know science can also understand what science is and maybe even become interested in it. So I've always loved atoms, and I think I love God so much because he made atoms.
Unless I'm mistaken, you're made out of atoms. Is that correct?
Made out of it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
They make up everything.
I thought that was the case. One of the things that and I'm going to go to the phones in a quick sec, but I wanted to ask you about this, because when you talk about science in that way, that as kind of searching for the fullness of truth and the basic building blocks of what's true and what's real, and that opens out onto questions about God. It doesn't close off questions about God. One of the things that I've found striking in what you've taught me over the years is that students actually do better learning science when science is taught to them as the study of God's creation, because it's meaningful. They don't face the question, why are we studying this? Why are we doing this?
Yeah, exactly. That's one of the most powerful things I've found in teaching. Like, I teach university classes, but I teach science, I teach physics and chemistry and mathematics to non-science majors. So they're very hesitant to even pick up a calculator, and they're afraid they can't do it. And that's one of the things I say that just puts their mind at ease. Like, you're not expected to remember every single thing about chemistry, but you're expected to encounter it, to encounter the formulas and encounter the order that's in this world. It's one thing to say that God created an ordered world. It's another thing to try to balance a chemical equation and determine rate laws from that. So, I mean, it just takes it to a whole new level. And I do think, and I've been told many times, that students walk away from that experience with a deepened faith, a deeper understanding of what it means to have faith that God really does have this. There's conform your will to God's will. God's got a plan. You can trust God to be faithful. He's holding all of your electrons and all of the orbitals of all of your atoms at this very moment in time. And it's a bigger view of what's going on around us. And I think it's very important to have that view.
Several callers on the line, still some lines open. If you'd like to talk about faith and science, whether you are a person of faith or not, you're welcome to talk about faith and science with our guest, Dr. Stacy Trusenko, scientist, theologian, and philosopher, 888-318-7884. I might just have to go back to scientist and theologian. That's a lot. I mean, all right, let's start with Paul in Oregon. Paul, thanks for waiting. Go ahead with your question for Dr. Stacy Trusenko. Paul? Hang on, Paul. We're not going to let you go. I think there must be a mute somewhere in the equation. All right. We'll come back to you, Paul. We'll get you. But let's try this. Let's try Laura in North Carolina. We'll see how this one goes. And Paul, we want to get you back on the line. So don't give up. Laura, go ahead with your question for Dr. Stacy.
Okay. I'm going and paving the way for Paul.
Yes,
so
good.
Hi, Dr. Stacy.
Hi, Laura.
I've heard you a few times, so you might have addressed this already, and I missed it, but here we go. Decades ago, my chemistry teacher taught us the story of Kekulé discovering the structure of the benzene molecule by having that legendary dream of a snake chasing itself until it caught and swallowed its own tail. And I just wonder, does this fun anecdote have any biblical resonance for you, or is it merely scientific apocrypha alone?
I would say the latter. I mean, if he had a dream and he discovered it, there's all kinds of different explanations for having dreams. Certainly they can be angels talking to us or God trying to talk to us, but they can also just be our brains doing things. So I don't know the story about his dream, but Kekulé is the principal founder of the theory of chemical structure, and particularly, like you said, of benzene. So maybe there was something to it. I just don't think there's really much we need to make. It's probably just an interesting anecdote, but I don't think there's much that we need to make of it right now. Benzene has turned out to be a very important molecule in our understanding of how organic systems work. So he contributed a lot to the field for having discovering that there's a ring structure of carbon atoms instead of they're always linear or branched.
What do you think, Laura?
Well, I think that that's fair enough, and though I have forgotten almost all my chemistry equations and formulas and everything, that benzene ring molecule story persists and will probably do so forever in my mind. Thank you for addressing that.
Thank you. Thank you. Benzene's a really cool molecule. I mean, the way we think about it chemically is it's a ring of six carbon atoms, and there's double bonds holding them all together. And we think of them not as a double bond, single bond, double bond, single bond, but we think of it as of electrons just kind of running around all of the bonds together, holding that ring together. And so it's a very important, stable structure in nature because of that. And it's a great example of how parts contribute to the whole, how the whole is different. You can't reduce the whole down to just the sum of the parts.
Laura, thank you for the call. I'm always delighted when we get to talk about benzene. It really is one of my favorite molecules as well, of all the molecules. I love,
thank you, Laura.
I love donut molecules. I love bagel molecules and benzene. Those are my three favorites. Laura, the number here is 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. It seems to me, Stacy, that you want to study philosophy of matter. It seems to me like the hot philosophy is philosophy of mind. And like, what is the mind? Is the mind just a epiphenomenon? I love that word. Or is the mind, you know, is it some kind of dualist thing with which it is, by the way, soul and body? Have you done any of that? Have you done any like this seems to me another place where science and philosophy and theology are all just going to keep bumping heads for a while, the science or the philosophy of mind.
Yes. And The way I'm coming at it, so yes, I'm trying to get there. I want to get to talking about evolution. I want to get to talking about biology and also the philosophy of mind, like you're saying. But I'm trying to get there through matter first. And one of the most significant changes in the way I think. So I was a chemist before I became Catholic, and I never quite realized how much of a materialist I was. Like, you know, you don't want to say that as a Catholic. You don't want to say that I think only the material world exists. I understand that there is matter and form, that we're body and soul, that the soul is the form of the body. I understand that. I just don't know. I can say it. I just don't know if I completely understand it. But one of the biggest changes for me in thinking about that and how to understand matter's not just floating around waiting for some spooky form thingy to come grab it and turn it into something, is instead of thinking of existing things from the bottom up, like it's just a collection of particles, I'm thinking about it more from the top down. So I'm understanding that God is the form giver. God has the form of things in his mind. And when God creates, the matter is disposed to the form. It's kind of like we pick the right matter to put in the bowl to make a cake. The matter is disposed of the form. So when you talk about our own brains and our bodies, the matter is disposed to the form, but the form of the human is to be, we have a rational soul. So there is some way where whatever perceptions we're taking in through our senses, like when you see a red apple, there are things going on in your brain that's analyzing the color red from the wavelengths of light hitting your retina to the smells to the touch. And your brain is processing this as a perception, which goes into your memories. But at some point, it informs our intellect. And so, you know, what is that? How is that working? I mean, we can say it informs the intellect, but we're not really sure, like, what that means. So that's what philosophy is really good at. It dives into those really deep questions and gives us a way to try and understand it. But like I said, I think understanding what matter is underneath all of that first.
And there's work to be done there. It's not just a let's recover what the medieval and ancient philosophers knew. That all of that can go in the blender with modern science, and we probably can make advances in our understanding of what matter is.
Yes, because a lot of times scientists who are not, you know, they're not Catholics, they're not people of faith, they're not thinking about God created this world, they're not thinking about virtue and trying to get to heaven, they're not thinking about all those things, they're just thinking about science. And a lot of times they don't make good decisions about what experiments they're going to do because they've already kind of got the conclusion in their mind ahead of them when they're designing the experiments. And so one way that philosophy and theology can guide science is to help ask the right questions and design the right experiments to answer them.
What a cool insight.
We need that. And I know scientists are like that because I did that.
All right, more calls. Elijah in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Welcome, Elijah. Go ahead with your question for Dr. Stacy Drasenkos. Elijah?
Hi, Dr. Drasenkos.
Hi, Elijah.
I just have a question about intelligent design. So one thing I have a hard time with is that I see a lot of people considering intelligent design its own theory or like something that seriously contends as a supplement to Darwinian evolution theory. Do you see it as that? I feel like it's they raise good questions, and it's important to have good critical analysis of those questions, but I just feel like it's not right to put it as its own theory. But I also haven't read deeply into the arguments they put forward. So what do you think about that?
Well, if you look up some things I've written or you look in Particles of Faith, I've made it pretty clear that I am opposed to intelligent design theory. I've talked with Dr. Michael Behe before. There's a radio recording where we actually had a conversation. I wouldn't really call it a debate. I don't think you need something like intelligent design theory to convince people that God created the universe. I think that intelligent design theory is a lot like giving God a test, our human test, to see if he passes it, and then we can call it design. I'm much more comfortable, more in line with what Aquinas says in the five ways. God created everything. And the more you understand about nature, the more you see that order. And it's pervasive. It's not just we find design here or there in biological systems or DNA. We find design everywhere, all the way down to the electrons in atoms and the quarks in atoms. That stuff is all very ordered. And so I think that there is design everywhere, and I don't see the usefulness of a intelligent design theory, because it sounds like to atheists we're just trying to, as Richard Dawkins said, sneak God in the back door. I'd rather just say, look, I'm Catholic. I believe God created everything, and I look at the universe as God's handiwork, and I study it, and lo and behold, we find order and goodness and humbleness because we don't know everything. I also disagree with intelligent design theory because it's too much anthropomorphizing God. It's too much pitching God as some external designer that it sounds like to me they think of God as walking through, and they can correct me. I'll probably get some emails about this. But their approach sounds to me like they think God is just walking through the universe and tripped over nature and decided to arrange some things in an orderly way. And then when we look at it, we're like, oh, look, there's design. But the way we understand it through Aristotelian natural philosophy and the way Aquinas understood it is there's intrinsic, internal design. It's not, God's not a tinkerer of nature.
Stacey, we got to take the break. Hang on.
I'll stop talking.
Yeah, we'll get it. We'll continue on the other side. Hang on, Elijah. We just need a minute break. We hope that one of the things that we communicate here at Catholic Answers Live is that our Catholic faith allows us to be fully serious about all the problems we encounter in the church and in the world, but it also lets us have light hearts and maybe even mix in a bit of fun. And that is exactly what our good friend Joe Heschmeyer does in his popular podcast, Shameless Popery. You should check it out at shamelessjoe.com. Joe's got a deep grasp of the faith, of morals, the teachings of the church, all that. But he's also got a witty conversational style. He entertains and he informs. But you will leave equipped to better answer the most common challenges, misconceptions, and questions about the Catholic faith. He's got insightful guests. He does on-air debates. And he takes a close look into all the things that you want to know about as a Catholic living today. You'll walk away knowledgeable and filled with joy. Look for Joe on his YouTube channel. Check him out at shamelessjoe.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, become a patron.
Deepen your connection to the Church's holy days and seasons while you draw on the wisdom of the Church Fathers. Feasts of Our Fathers, the new book from Mike Aquilina and Adam Lucas, is a treasury of history, prayers, insights, and lessons that will bring you closer to the earliest of Catholic traditions. Take your prayer life and your solidarity with the Church, past and present, to a new level. Order your copy of Feasts of Our Fathers today at shop.catholic.com.
When the resurrected Jesus appeared to disciples on the road to Emmaus, they didn't recognize him until the breaking of the bread. The same is true today. In the Holy Eucharist, we really meet Jesus. In The Eucharist is Really Jesus, author Joe Heschmeyer explains how knowing Jesus in the Eucharist is the key to understanding all of Christian faith. Order your copy of The Eucharist is Really Jesus today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore.
Special guest Peter Lee talks about suffering. That's Monday's topic on Take Two with Jerry and Debbie on most of these EWTN stations. And now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Yes, I said donut molecules are some of my favorite molecules. Dr. Stacey Trusenko is our guest this hour. We're talking faith and science. It always gets wild towards the end of the hour. Like, everybody wants to call. And so you should probably get on the line now. There's just one line open at the moment. But if you've got a faith and science question, come at it from the science side, from the faith side, from the agnostic side, whatever you want. You're welcome to call and talk with Dr. Trusenko. It's 888-318-7884. She's a chemist who's also got a couple other master's degrees, one in theology, one in philosophy. philosophy, and so very ready to talk about these things. Elijah in Oklahoma City is on the line, and I'm sorry that I had to interrupt the conversation to go to the break. But Elijah, I wanted to come back to you. You had asked about whether intelligent design could be kind of a supplement to Darwinian evolutionary theory. Did you want to respond or follow up?
I just want to say I think you gave a great answer, and I think I know where to focus my reading and where not to. And before anybody getting after you for not supporting that, I just want to say that I find it, I think what you're basically saying is that it's even more marvelous that the Lord could, from the Big Bang, create things like us without needing to constantly rearrange things and cause miracles. And there may be evolutionary miracles. I have no problem with that. But I do think that you can also appreciate that he makes our bodies and everything to work day after day without ever needing to do something extraordinary.
Yes, and it's even more amazing. You're so right. You're exactly right.
Elijah, thanks very much.
Thank you, Elijah,
for the call and for the question. And I just kind of following up on what Elijah said. I believe that I have understood you before to say the following, but you please correct me if I'm wrong. That if there were, he mentioned evolutionary miracles. Let's say, for example, the jump from one kind of carryout to the other kind of carryout, these actually required a divine intervention at some point, mm-hmm. then that wouldn't be a scientific question. That would be a historical question.
Right. Exactly.
Okay.
That's exactly how I answered the Adam and Eve question. We don't know exactly what happened when Adam and Eve were in the garden. We don't know, and I think it's wrong to expect evolutionary science to ever figure that question out, and we don't have to rule out a miracle, so we shouldn't. It's just that we also can't say we know exactly what happened. I don't agree with attempts to say we know when certain miracles happened back then, because we don't know. So it's possible that God worked a miracle in the beginning of the human race, and however it happened, we're here now,
and we know he made us
so much. Yeah, and we know he made us. I mean, it's nobody knows when a brand new human being pops into existence in his or her mother's womb either. I mean, nobody knows that exact moment when it happens. The mother is probably the first to know, but that's amazing right there. You know, we don't even know when we begin to exist. So
right. Elijah, I'll just recommend a book if you haven't gotten it, Dr. Trusenkos' book, Particles of Faith. I think that you will enjoy it. I think you'll enjoy that read. I'm going to keep moving to try to get other folks on with Dr. Stacy Trusenkos, scientist and theologian. Robert is in Southern Illinois listening on the Covenant Radio Network. Robert, we're awful glad you're here. Go ahead with your question for Dr. Trusenkos.
Yes, I have a rather short question that might bleed into other subjects. And it's the famous father of quantum theory, Max Planck, once said, everything postulates consciousness. Do you think panpsychism is a real thing?
That's a good and short question. Panpsychism,
could you define it? Just because I think there's not me, you know, certainly not me, but some people might not know what panpsychism is.
Do you want me to define it? Or
yes.
How about,
either one of you. Actually, I'm sorry, Robert, I didn't mean to exclude you, anybody, but I think we do need a definition for people to know what we're talking about.
Okay.
Panpsychism. Go ahead, Stacey.
You go ahead.
Robert, would you please define panpsychism for us?
Panpsychism is that consciousness is inherent in all matter and or material.
Yes, and it's that doctrine or belief, I'm reading it because I have it in front of me, that everything material, however small, has an element of individual consciousness. So theologically speaking, that's not how we understand creation. That's not how we understand God creating everything. Now, Aquinas does say, and there are scriptures in the Bible that says God is in all things, but it's not, he's not in all things in that way, giving every element of matter an individual consciousness. It's close to hylomorphism in the sense that God is the form giver, and God, if we're going to create a table, if we're going to build a table using matter that God created, we have a form of it in our mind, and then we put the matter together in a way that fits the abstract form we had in our mind. God is doing that. That's how Aquinas explains it. God's doing that with all creation, but it doesn't mean that the matter itself has the consciousness. Rather, there's a creator. And so that seems like a small distinction, but when you think about the difference between that or even something like pantheism, which is the belief that the universe itself is God or a living organism, that is drastically, infinitely different from creation, which is the view that God is the creator of everything. So it keeps us from thinking that matter has its own mind. It keeps us from thinking that the world is a god, or deifying the world, or deifying nature. It keeps us clearly, even science in its place, as the study of God's handiwork. And so we don't agree with panpsychism or pantheism, but nevertheless, Max Planck's quote, and I've got the whole thing right here, he says, I regard consciousness as fundamental. I regard matter as derivative from consciousness. We cannot get behind consciousness. Everything that we talk about, everything that we regard as existing, to what you said, postulates consciousness. So what he's doing, I think, with not really knowing exactly what he's thinking, it sounds like he is seeing that there must be a creator, that there must be someone who gave the form to all of this that we see existing in nature, on planet Earth and in the universe. But he's just not saying it very well. He doesn't want to. I see this a lot, especially with the quantum mechanics, early people like Heisenberg and Oppenheimer. They don't necessarily want to say God created everything, but yet they see this mind at work in creation. And so they, rather than going bigger, they're trying to stay down at the particle level and just say there's consciousness in the particles, because it makes something. And let me tell you, when you're a chemist who doesn't believe, I've done that, I've been there, it's really hard to make sense of what you do, because every little thing you do depends on something existing beside you, something existing objectively that has this order you're trying to discover. And so it's the most natural question in the world to say, I wonder who created this. But if you want to avoid God, you can't let yourself go there. And so you just sort of put the blinders on and look down and do your work, but you never have a satisfying answer to the biggest why of all. So I think that's what he was trying to do, if I could just read his mind a little bit there.
What do you think, Robert?
Well, the Catholic priest, Father Richard Rohr, which I'm sure you're familiar with, he says that as opposed to pantheism, is the more correct way of looking at it. Would you agree?
I'd have to look at more at what he said. Panentheism?
Panentheism.
Yeah,
I'm not sure exactly what that means.
Yeah, I'd have to look at what he said a little more. I'm very careful to say anything other than creation, because it means a lot. And that's when it might sound good on the surface, but I'm really careful about that.
Robert, thanks very much. It is striking that we see this in the human personality again and again. The resistance to God makes us, in a certain sense, denigrate the human. That is, the most obvious thing in the world is that the human consciousness is unique in everything we know. And so in order to avoid that, the necessity for God to consciously be the creator and sustainer of the universe, we'll say, well, everything's conscious, which then ends up denigrating the human being.
Yes.
It takes away the uniqueness of the human being. So it's either God or you just can't have a unique and irreplaceable human creature.
Yes. And I mean, they don't realize they throw the baby out with the bathwater when they do that. And Werner Heisenberg especially did it. He's got a book called Physics and Philosophy, and he really goes to great lengths. I mean, he's the founder of quantum mechanics, and nobody can talk about what quantum mechanics means better than him. And he really tries to get into Aristotelian philosophy and understand what it means. But you can see it in his book. There's certain places where you can put your finger on the sentence on the page where he, it's almost like he sees God up ahead and turns back.
Yeah.
And he was a believer. He just didn't know how to talk about God in the context of his science. I don't think he was an atheist. I don't think he was ever perfectly clear about it. But you can see where they just turn around and say, oh, okay, we have to explain this in terms of matter, because they don't want to sound, they don't want to sound like they're invoking mythological explanations for their science, which I get. But you're not doing that when you're talking about Aquinas' five ways and creation and the way we look at nature. You're not doing that. But they feel like if they talk about God, it's going to discredit them as scientists.
Dr. Stacey Jasenkos is our guest. Robert in Southern Illinois, thank you for the call and the question. We have room probably to take one or two more calls given those on the line. We have to take a quick break, so a great time to call if you have a question about faith and science. 888-318-7884.
This is Archbishop Paul Coakley, the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Who was the first Catholic in your family? Were they evangelized by a friend, a coworker, a stranger? Did you ever think that you could be that person that God uses to save a soul, and that soul could save their family, their grandchildren, and generations to come? At St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, we train, equip, and mobilize Catholic disciples to do the urgent work of evangelization. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization, streetevangelization.com.
The most original Catholic content is on EWTN Radio.
What have you always wanted to know about the Vatican? Well, I'm your Vatican Insider, and I answer that question when I bring you the news about the Pope, Vatican City, and I share insights and stories from a broad spectrum of church ministries.
Vatican Insider with Joan Lewis, Saturday night, 9 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. If you love Jesus and you like benzene rings, this is the hour for you. We're talking faith and science. 888-318-7884. Dr. Stacey Jasenkos is our guest. She's probably one of the few people who laughs at my jokes, which I appreciate. I don't think that actually speaks highly of you, Stacey, but it sure makes me happy. Lots of folks on the line, so back we go. Noah, right here in California. Noah, thank you for waiting. Go ahead with your question for Dr. Stacey.
Hello. Thank you, everyone. Appreciate everything you guys do.
Thank you.
Every single individual. My question for Stacey would be, with your knowledge and education, what can you explain or talk about the part where conception happens? There's also too, I saw that scientists looked into it and they saw a glow when it happened, like a light or something. So I don't know if you have knowledge of that too as well.
Yes, I do. I remember when that report came out. So first of all, at conception, so that we call it, fertilization. I've heard people say, and I agree with them very much, we should never call that zygote a fertilized egg, because it is a new human organism at that point. But the beautiful thing about fertilization, so I said a little while ago, nobody knows exactly when that happens except God. Like, I'm talking about in the moment when it actually happens, like when the woman's sitting there and the sperm meets the egg and they fuse. Their membranes begin to fuse, and then they start to combine their genetic material, and that zygote starts to divide and multiply exponentially. Nobody knows when that actually happens, but it does happen, and it's amazing. I mean, we believe at that same moment, that same instant, that as a special creation. God creates the human soul, and so there is a new human person at that moment. And the mother will probably, if she practices NFP, she'll probably know in a few weeks, maybe, or maybe even a little bit sooner. But what happens in that moment is itself a process. So picture in the womb, the sperm is coming along the fallopian tube, and there's the egg that's ready to receive the sperm, and there's a competition, and one of them gets through. In that moment when it happens, that's still in time. And I have wondered myself, and we don't know, and I don't think there is a way to ever know, but there's so many chemical events happening at that moment. Like, what nanosecond does the new human pop into existence? What femtosecond? Like, you can keep parsing time as small as you want, and we don't know. At some point, it just happens. And the way we say it with our scientific language is that as soon as the sperm and egg membranes fuse, the whole unit is now acting as one. Once the membranes touch and start fusing, the chemical changes happen within the whole assembly now. And that whole thing, even though the DNA hasn't combined in the nucleus yet, it's still acting as one. And so if you try to push it as far as you can chemically, when does that new human first exist? As soon as the sperm and egg stop acting like sperm and egg individually and start acting as one, literally two become one. And that's as far as we can push it, you know, and backing out from that. Okay, what about the next day or the next day or when the heart starts to beat, all that? Yeah, there's long been a new human organism by that point. And if there's a human body, there's a human soul. And if there's a human body and a human soul, there's a human person. And so that's a beautiful teaching of the church, but I think also for some people it's a hard teaching because it means a lot of things about how we treat that tiny, tiny, tiny little human. Does that answer your question, though?
Yes, it does. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Noah, thank you very much for the call and for the question. We're talking faith and science. If you've got a question where those two meet, you are welcome to call 888-318-7884. But with just a few more minutes left in the show, let's go to Epi in Eugene, Oregon. Epi, welcome. Go ahead with your question for Dr. Trisankos.
Hello, doctor. Thank you for taking my call. There's a lot of activity taking place in a location you might be familiar with. It's the Large Hadron Collider in Switzerland and France. I believe the Vatican actually has investments in this machine, and it's a particle physics machine or particle collider. I would like to get your thoughts on that. And second of all, the discoveries that have been coming out of this facility, the scientists have literally stated that they have found new forms of what they refer to as existence or matter that has a form of life to it. That's the best way I can paraphrase. And I'll go ahead and listen to your answer off the air.
Okay, I haven't heard that about having a form of life, but I would answer that the same way I did with the Max Planck question. The scientists may be seeing something that looks like properties of life, like growth and reproduction and change and responding to environment. So there may be some dynamism there, and that may be the way they're talking about it. But as far as that research goes in general, I'm just like the churches, if they have an investment there, I don't know about that. But if you say that, I believe it. I believe that the church would have some kind of investment in that kind of research into the very recesses of matter and what these particles underneath particles do, that search for truly elementary particles that aren't made up of anything else. And so just in general, I think we should always support that kind of research. We shouldn't be afraid of what crazy things will be discovered, but we also, and I talk about this in Particles of Faith, we need to respect the scientists doing work like that, but we also need to be cautious about the language they use sometimes. So, and I don't mean that in any kind of condescending way towards the scientists. I have a lot of respect for scientists because they take data that nobody's ever looked at before, that they have gathered with their experiments, And they interpret it, and then they publish their interpretations, and they put their reputation on the line by doing that. And if they didn't have that kind of courage, we wouldn't have new discoveries. So I have a lot of respect for scientists, even ones who aren't faithful scientists, but I also don't take every single thing they say and call it gospel truth. And I know Catholics don't either, but I listen to what they say. I try to understand what they're doing. I try to be fascinated. I always maintain that awe and wonder, and just see what happens. Scientific discovery is a very, very slow process. And so it's not a straight line. There will be discoveries made and rescinded. There will be corrections to theories. So if that's the kind of thing that interests you or anybody else, there you are totally encouraged to follow that and understand what they're saying. And I actually teach classes about how to do this well. But take what they say in stride. Like, no single scientific paper ever published, rarely does it happen where it even changes paradigms. It's just one little atom, if you will, of research that's contributing to the bigger body of knowledge. So just understand our place in time, how these things are being discovered, and enjoy it. Enjoy what the scientists are saying and try to understand what they're doing.
Epi, I'm going to leave it there because I invited calls and I want to make sure I get everybody on. Gabe is in Texas. Gabe, welcome. Go ahead with your question for Dr. Stacy Trusankos.
Hi. I've been listening to Trent Horn before talk about abortion. Why should anybody take the position that the Catholic Church has on abortion and force it upon legislation?
Well, the Catholic Church doesn't just have positions on things for the sake of forcing it on. Actually, that's against Catholic teaching to force these things on society. But we're after the truth. The Catholic Church takes what was revealed by God in the life of Christ and tries to understand what it means for us. So why should anyone accept the Catholic position on abortion? Because it's the truth. It is the way to uphold human dignity for ourselves, for our families, in our relationships, in our marriages, in our communities, in our nations. And so if you're not leading the way with that absolute respect for all humans and their dignity that's inherent, if you're not seeing every single human that way, then there's a problem. There are going to be problems that come from that. And I know it's hard, and I know Trent talks about this a lot too. It's difficult because you have children conceived who weren't expected, and it makes a lot of demands on how we deal with that. It would be lovely to see a culture that embraced the Catholic teaching on life completely, because then, only then, could we actually see how that works out, what it's like when human dignity is respected to that extent.
Gabe, we have a minute. So did you have a follow-up, or is that answer acceptable to you?
Yeah, I mean, do you have empirically, objectively verifiable, observable, repeatable, testable evidence that your God is real before we take your position on abortion?
I can't answer that in 1 minute, but yes, it is more than just experience. It's more than just thinking there's some flying spaghetti monster out there because I need to feel better. There's a lot of intellectual thought put in the Catholic tradition into understanding what we mean when we say God, what we can know about God through reason, what we know about God because of faith and divine revelation, and putting it all together. And one of the biggest teachings is that humans have free will, and so we have to make a decision about what we believe. And I put as one evidence forward the satisfaction and happiness I saw in other Catholics and I found for myself, but that's just my personal experience. There's lots of arguments for the existence of God. And as a chemist, I would say, I don't know how you can look at atoms and how they form molecules and not believe there's a creator.
Gabe, thanks very much. I'll be happy to send you some books, but you might check out Dr. Trusankos' book, Particles of Faith, which talks about gives some insight into her own move into as a PhD working for DuPont Chemical, a chemist coming into the Catholic Church. But if you'd like it, I have a couple of books that I'd be happy to send you. We have a little booklet called Why We're Pro-Life, and I can send you that. Also, also, we have a book called Why We're Catholic. I'd be happy to send you that. And I'm very grateful for your call. Thank you, Gabe. I appreciate that. But we are at the end of this hour. Dr. Stacy Jasankos, I always enjoy the time with you. Thank you very much for taking the time.
Thank you. I enjoyed it. Thank you, Cy.
Are you already in your PhD program? Or do you? Is that like it's coming up?
I fly to Ireland on September 14th to begin it. So I've got a little downtime right here. I just finished my master's and I'm about to start the doctoral program.
I'm so glad to hear you have 15 days of downtime before you start another major academic endeavor. Good for you for taking 15 days of downtime. Spend some of it with your 7 children, your horses, and I hope we'll see you again soon. Thanks, Stacy.
Thank you, Cy.
All right, coming up, we're going to do the Church in the News. We'll talk about news stories with Dr. Matthew Bunsen, who runs the news division for the EWTN Global Catholic Radio and Television Networks. And if you've got questions, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. Right back with Dr. Bunsen and the Church in the News right after this on Catholic Answers Live.